Hello and welcome to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And on this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to have with me Danny Bryant, one of the UK's best blues guitarists. And you're about to release, I think, is it your 15th album, Danny? Including the live ones.
I've not counted it. I think people keep saying it's the 13th, but I think they're just counting studio ones. So we have had a couple of live ones.
Live,
you
yeah.
Could, you could be right there, yeah.
Yeah, because I always count live albums as part of the artist's catalogue.
Yeah,
because they're just as important. Before I come on to the new album, which everybody, you need to buy. It's available on CD and vinyl. It's fantastic. I'm going to go through, ask you quite a bit about the tracks as well.
Cool. But
you turned professional as a guitarist at a very early age, 18.
Mm.
I mean, what was your dad involved in getting you interested in music?
Yeah, both my parents really, and you know, I couldn't have done it without their support, because, you know, I mean, people say to me now, well, that was a brave move, but it was like, well, hang on a minute, it wasn't really brave. You know, I had no mortgage, you know, I lived at home and I had my parents' support, so, you know, if it didn't work, you know, I could have, you know, stopped it. But yeah, and my dad played bass in the band for quite a few years, but it wasn't something that he pushed me into. He just encouraged it.
But this is quite an early age. This is like the 80s, isn't it? You went down the path of the blues. You fell in love with the blues. And what drew you to that as a musical genre?
Well, I think that was, to be honest, what was around the house,
right?
And you know, when you're a kid and you're learning guitar, I think like blues is probably quite appealing because there's a lot of guitar in it. There's a lot of solos, and we had a lot of Eric Clapton stuff in the house, and Rory Gallagher and Jimi Hendrix. And then I went back further and you know, started listening to the older guys, you know, the guys that they were influenced by.
Yeah, the Freddie Kings and BB Kings and people like that.
Exactly that, yeah.
Yeah. And was your dad played bass in your band, as you say, for quite a few years. Was he always a bass player, or did he move into that to help?
No, he played guitar, but he moved into that because, you know, I was 15 and wanted to form a band, and nobody wanted to play blues. So he said, well, I'll do it until you find somebody.
which took longer than you thought, but I guess it, what a great experience for you though, to have all those years playing with your dad.
It was fantastic. Yeah, it really was.
And the other guy that has had an influence on you, being part of your life, is Walter Trout. How did that come about? When did you first encounter him?
Well, he's like my second dad. So, I mean, I wrote him a letter. Well, my parents took me to see him when I was about 14. And I wrote him a letter. It was the days of letters.
Yeah.
So pre-email. And he rang me up. And he said he'd remembered me. He'd come out to watch the supporting band, and he remembered me standing there, he said, because it had reminded him of when he was a kid going to concerts with his mum and dad, you know, because I was like the only young lad there. And we struck up a friendship. And then my parents, Walter always used to tour in the summer in June. And my parents used to take me, and Walter would go up to his room, get his guitar, and come down and sit in the hotel garden with me. And I'd bring my guitar, and he'd spend an hour giving me a lesson, you know. Wow. And that went from that to playing on albums. And then when he had his liver transplant, he phoned me up and said, look, I can't do this 7-week tour I've got, and my band need to work. Will you come over to America and front it? So I went and did that. So, yeah, quite a friendship.
That is amazing. That really is, because he's a absolutely wonderful artist with some great albums. Yeah. I mean, I can tell from your face, you're looking, remembering it now, it must have made such a such an impact, you know, on your life, really fantastic. What's your main guitar? I've noticed that from a different interview, you've got like a special guitar with really unique pickups on it.
Yeah, well, this new guitar, the white one that you're seeing, Trev Wilkinson, who's kind of a legend in the guitar industry, we're bringing out some Danny Bryan signature pickups, and he said, look, I want to build you your dream guitar, and because I tour so much, I need two of everything. I know that sounds greedy, but
spare, yeah.
So he built me two, and it's the best. You know, one I literally keep one as a backup. I don't touch it. So I'll just talk about the one, although they're identical. And yeah, it's the best guitar I've ever played. I think because it was built specifically for me, and we've known each other for 20 years. It has everything I need on a guitar.
Because you coming into the blues world, this you also see traditional there are Strat players or Les Paul players or, you know, 335 players or Telecaster, but you've gone down a unique bespoke custom route. Have you played like Gibsons, and what was it that made you?
I mean, I've got Gibsons. I've got an old Strat. I've got custom shop Strats. I think because I've had them all, and then. I mean, you know, some people find their dream guitar like Walter did it at sort of 23 years old and never let it go. But it's taken me all this time to find the guitar for me where I can't really go on stage with anything else, you know, where I feel comfortable. So I think because I've played them all and I just know what I want now, you know.
So your influences from your dad, obviously, being in the house was like Hendrix and Rory Gallagher, as you say, Eric Clapton.
Well, Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan. For you yourself, being younger and obviously being introduced to Walter Trout, were there any other kind of blues guitarists that have kind of been literally instrumental to your style or influenced along when you first started?
Well, B.B. King's a massive one. Freddie King, who you mentioned, Albert Collins. Albert King, the list goes on. Otis Rush is another huge one for me. I mean, the thing is that the once I got to know Walter, you know, he would sort of feed me these names. You need to listen to this guy now, you know, get some of this in your playing and
yeah.
So he would it would be a constant, you know, we'd talk and it would be like, okay, go and listen to this, buy this, you know, listen to this and things like that. Roy Buchanan, he turned me on to him.
It's interesting. I'd like to go into the album now, and that's one of the names that pops up when I was listening to some of the tracks, actually.
Yeah.
This album, Rise, it's wonderful, gritty blues guitar, great vocals, lots of angst and pain, love, loss.
Yeah,
you managed to scoop up everything that you'd want from a great blues rock album, and you've also got some great musicians with you, haven't you? Great Hammond keyboards and stuff.
Yes, my touring band. So, you know, that was a good idea to bring the guys in that you're on the road with, because there's a lot of almost telepathy going on there when you tour a lot together.
And was this album recorded with you in the same room together?
Actually, no, not as much as the last two. It was more produced, but the basic tracks were, you know, but there's quite a lot of overdubs on this one.
Yeah, okay. Louise, which is the third track in, is just nice slow blues, laid-back drums, and the solo, it's one of those, I thought, as I was listening to it, I thought, this is one of these songs where a single note says 1,000 words when you come into the solo. I mean, when you play the solos, when you think, are they done in the moment or have you constructed them beforehand?
No, they're very much done in the moment. I tend to try and get the solos within one or two takes, because otherwise I find what happens is I play a little part of something I like and I tend to to learn it or try and learn it. And then I try and repeat it and it's never as good.
Yeah.
So we sort of have a rule that will give me, say, 3 passes at a solo. And then if it's not working, we'll put it away and we'll come back to it in a few hours time and do something else.
Do you think that, because that's, I've always felt that with blues music, especially with the soloing, it has to literally be, doesn't it, in the moment. If you start to write it down or rehearse it and remember it, it loses that, because the blues is feeling, isn't it? It's emotion.
It's from pure one person emotion. To another. You know, if you haven't got that, you haven't got anything. So I always try and play within the song. I always try and play for the song. And that is true, that most of it is 1 or 2 takes. I don't say that in a showing off way. I just find that that's what's worked for me, you know.
It gives that wonderful kind of live feel, doesn't it, as well?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I play the way I play, so I can play it 100 times. It's probably going to get worse rather than better.
Yeah. Well, we talked quite a bit about your guitar playing and styles and influences. I mean, you're also a great vocalist, great blues singer. What kind of vocalist were you inspired by or continue to be inspired by now?
Well, I mean, you know, oddly, I don't sound anything like him, but I'm a huge Dylan fan. Listen to a lot of Bruce Springsteen. And all the blues guys we mentioned, you know. I mean, I think what you can mold your guitar style by your influences, because you'll play something by Freddie King and then you'll play a lick by Eric Clapton and then you've got to join them up and then the bit in the middle becomes you. But I think with vocals, they're almost, in a way, the way you speak. So you're born with a voice that's going to, you can work on it, make it better, maybe make it more in pitch, but you're born with how your voice is going to sound, I think.
And I mean, on things like Hard Way to Go, which is a nice, really, like a slow blues shuffle, your vocals, you sound like you're really hurting in that song. The emotion you put into the guitar also comes through in the vocals.
Yeah.
Do you have a similar approach to when you do the vocal line, that it's literally, I'm going to give this 1 or 2 takes, otherwise I'm going to step back?
What we tend to do with that is we tend to go for a whole take and then maybe punch in the odd line. I'm a little bit more fussy on the singing.
Right.
Because it's not as natural to me as playing guitar. So, but having a producer, you know, there now is they tell me, no, leave it or I want something better. And so that works nicely for me.
The next track on the album that I really love is Scarlet Street, which is a ballad. And this is the one that I thought of Roy Buchanan when I heard it.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of feel to it. There's also a bit of Dire Straits and Mark Knopfler in amongst it as well.
Well, I'm a big fan of him as well.
Ah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a ballad. All these songs are autobiographical. That one I wrote, we were in Germany and we had an early show and me and one of the band, we went out for a beer or something after the show, and there was a lady there, you know, it was like, we didn't actually know it, but it was like a red light type area, and I saw this lady and I felt just so sorry for her. And I just read the Bob Dylan book Chronicles, and he talked about seeing a lady, and he said this phrase in the book, and he said she had a beauty, but it wasn't the kind of beauty for this world. And I'd carried that saying around in my head. It really stuck with me or bothered me or something. And when I saw this lady, I never did speak to her, but I thought, I know what he's talking about now. So I went back and I wrote that song about her.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful song, as is the next one, Into the Slipstream, which has got almost like a gospel feel because of the way
that's very much a kind of, that's very much the theme running through the album, the whole Rise thing, you know, Into the Slipstream, the kind of the redemption and the positivity after COVID and lockdown and all the various kinds of, you know, hard times that everybody had to go through.
Yeah. I mean, I just love the guitar inflections, and the solo itself has got such an epic feel. It just fits in with the
That was fun, yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun.
You're going to say, so is that one of your favourites from the album?
I think it is. I think it probably is my favourite, yeah.
So it's that will be in the live set, I imagine.
It will. I mean, we'll have to approach it a little bit differently because, as you say, there's a lot of gospel in it and a lot of hand claps, and all of that is real. None of it's synthetic, you know. Then the backing singers, they're all real, you know. And obviously, I don't have those on tour, but I do have a horn section, you know, and things like that. So we can it'll be a case of adapting it, you know.
Yeah, and in your touring band, you also have another guitar player, don't you? To kind of to play while you're singing.
He features a lot on the album as well, so that frees me up a lot. And he would play things that I wouldn't think about playing. So it's two different flavours, really.
Yeah, yeah, it really works. And Julienne is another ballad. A love song, obviously, about lost love. Some lovely piano on it. And again, another gorgeous guitar solo. I mean, were some of the songs where you thought, I'm going to love playing a solo over this? I'm just going to go in and, as you say, you just go in and just whatever, how you feel is what you played.
Yeah, I always do have an ear towards what the solo is going to be.
And because I'm kind of always interested when someone's like yourself, you are the singer and the player. Does that the way you play the solo, the way it comes out from the heart, is it connected to how you felt when you sang the words? Is that, I mean, do you lay down the vocal track before you do the guitar solo?
Yeah, I try and have everything in place before the solo comes last, in other words, yeah.
And so
I can get the emotion across, you know.
Yeah, because I always think that's an amazing thing, and I think a speciality for people like yourself who sing and play at the same time, whereas the guitarist is trying to interpret what the vocalist is doing. You are the same person.
Yeah, I think that makes it easier for me, really.
Yeah. And the next, Silver and Gold, another slow blues shuffle, and there's a bit of Gary Moore in this. Is that another kind of...
Yeah, he's another influence, and the idea we have with that, Ian's idea, the producer, was like, I'm in this, it's sort of the afternoon and I'm sitting in a bar and there's some instruments set up on stage and, you know, I pick up a guitar and start singing and someone else joins in and gradually we all join in, you know.
Yeah, it's really,
it's
really
like
cool.
A fun idea, you know.
And the next one, I Want You, great acoustic intro. Your voice is softer on this, but it's more upbeat, isn't it? Ballad, love song.
Excuse me, yeah. That's a Bob Dylan song. Which the thing that fascinated me was about that is he put that on Blonde on Blonde, and when he was, you know, he wrote that as a young man, so the song is written when you listen to it on Blonde on Blonde. It's like, I want you, you know, in other words, I can kind of have you, you know, I want you. And then I'd heard a bootleg from the MTV Unplugged thing he did in the 90s. And by this time he's been through divorce and he's coming into his, you know, probably his 60s, late 50s. And the song is more weary and it took on a completely different meaning. And it's like, I want you, but I can't have you type thing. And that was what appealed to me about the song was how a song can have a life. And that life of that song can completely change from, you know, upbeat, I want you, to, you know, want you, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like it would fit in really well with a TV cop show. It's got that kind of feel to it. It's like the soundtrack to a TV show. I also love the acoustic guitar solo as well.
I just did that at the end there, yeah.
That's really, really cool. And then, of course, your last one, which is a jam, just called Drown.
Yeah.
It sounds like the sort of thing that this could have gone on for about 9-10 minutes.
It did.
It did.
Yeah. It's just we clipped it. It was just like getting a level on all the instruments. And I thought it was pretty cool. So I said, oh, look, we'll keep it for now. And Ian said to me, yeah, we're going to need to really shorten it down because it gets a bit, could get a bit samey. So, yeah, it did go on for that. It did go on for about 9 minutes.
No, it's well, it feels like it should have done. I mean,
cut it down to about 2, I think.
Yeah, it's really short. It's kind of like that one of those situations where make them want more at the end, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think it was a good way to finish it because it was full of energy and gusto, shall we say.
It is, isn't it? It's I put down in my notes. It was great chord sequence and a real kind of let rip guitar solo in it as well. So it really was a way to, race towards the end of the album. When you play live, because you're now just starting an extensive tour. And for those of you watching, Danny has literally just come back from a gig. I'm doing this at 11 o'clock in the morning and you've had about 2 hours sleep. I mean,
I had three. So three. Yeah, I've got my Lemsip here, in my Danny Bryant mug.
Yeah, which is available, no doubt, from your website. But You, it's a hard life on the road as well, isn't it? And literally,
it can be. I mean, it's like you. I'm very fortunate to earn a living doing something I love, so I won't complain too much. It's and I do really enjoy doing the press. I enjoy doing these interviews and speaking to people like yourselves. But sometimes the traveling is the traveling's the bit I get paid for, really.
And the tour, because you're in the UK at the moment, and then you're off to Germany, the Netherlands, all over Europe. And it literally is. I'll put a link to your website wherever this is published. But you are literally playing continually, aren't you, for this?
Yeah, 6 weeks. Yeah.
And and for 2024, which isn't as far away as we think,
actually, we've not advertised those dates yet, but the tour. We take Christmas off and then it goes straight back on in January. We go to Romania, Transylvania, actually, and then back to the Netherlands and then, all over. Some UK again. So,
Lemsip aside, how healthy is the blues scene wherever you go around on your travels?
Well, this is real rock and roll, you see. I mean, I'd love to tell you I was sitting here with a Jack Daniels, but you wouldn't last very long doing that when you've got a schedule like mine. So Lemsip it has to be. It's pretty healthy at the moment, I think. It's good, yeah. I mean, it took a hit in the pandemic, but I think people are really desperate to get out and see, music again.
And blues music is just... it's just kind of like never goes out of... It's always there, isn't it? That's what I'm trying to say.
It'll go in waves, but it's always there because it's about the human condition. So as long as people have got problems, as long as people are happy about things, sad about things, and all points in between, then it's relevant.
Very true. And for yourself, you've been playing the blues. They say this is potentially your 15th album, including the two live ones.
Yeah.
When you approach each album, you just see everything as new again because you've never really repeated yourself. It's just
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I try and just see it as new. I don't put that pressure on myself other than, well, I suppose I do put the pressure that, I don't want to repeat myself, but I don't put the pressure of thinking, oh, God, this is album 15. I just think this is a new album.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, everybody, you need to listen to this. It's a wonderful, uplifting, joyous blues album that covers the whole of human relationships and emotion. It covers everything. I mean, how long, when you play live, Danny, I mean, how long is your set? I mean, you've got so much material now to cover.
Well, I like, I like kind of playing a long time simply because of what you just said. Now I've got a lot of songs I want to get through. So it really depends on, you know, certain venues have time restrictions of what certain promoters have times that they want you to play. Certain promoters demand two sets. Certain promoters will let you just play and play. It really does just depend. And sometimes, as much as you want to carry on, you've got to be aware that you don't want to blow your voice out when you've got another five weeks of playing or something like that. So,
because blues singing, especially the way you sing, I put down that in some of my notes that your voice is really gritty. It's kind of that really bluesy, guttural voice.
Yeah.
It could be quite easy to overreach or, you know, especially if you're not feeling like 100%. So,
well, the touch wood, that it hasn't ever really happened, but, you know, Lem Sip, try not to talk much in the day and, you know, yeah, when you're on the road, and tends to work.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much, Danny.
Thank you.
And I really wish you lots of luck for the tour, and make sure you get some rest before your next gig.
I will, yeah.
Rise, everyone. It's a great album. So where's the best place for people to buy this from? Where would you like people to go?
You can get it on Amazon or direct from the... You can get it directly from our website or from the label's website or from all good music shops, as they say.
As they say.
Which sadly are vastly dying out, but there are some good ones still. So.
And it's also available on vinyl as well, isn't it?
Yes, it's on vinyl, yeah.
Yes, so you've got a choice.
Everybody. All platforms, yeah.
All platforms. Well, take care, and thanks, Danny. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for taking the time. I enjoyed it.
No problem. Hopefully we'll catch up again in the future.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you. Well, a huge thank you to my guest, Danny Bryant, and make sure you check out his album Rise, which is available now, and it's also available on vinyl. One of the hardest working blues rock guitarist around at the moment. Absolutely superb player. This is his 15th album, including the two live ones. Absolutely amazing player. And a hard working musician as well. As you can see, when I was talking to him there, he'd had about 3 hours sleep. So I'm really pleased and honored that he had time to talk to me, but it's a great album. So make sure you subscribe. And also check out DannyBryant.com to see all his albums, but subscribe to Now Spinning Magazine, obviously, for the podcasts, for the YouTube channel, for the website, for the Facebook group, for the whole multiverse of all the channels we're on. And please, if you can, become a subscriber, becoming a patron, a YouTube member, and you'll get to see all of my videos and interviews and reviews, etc., before they go public, and lots of exclusive material as well. So take care, everybody. Remember, music is the healer and the doctor, and I shall see you very, very soon.